to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Nikki Nellis with Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. It is me, Nikki Nellis. I am once again beastless. I feel like this is happening an awful lot and I'm really kind of cool with it. I think it should just be Industry Night with Nikki Nellis. I think I'm going to officially change the show and rock it out completely on my level. So maybe the show won't be as funny because he is the joke maker, but I think it'll be a better show regardless. And lucky me, tonight I have two good friends with me. I have Scott Druneau, who you may remember from the restaurant The Source by Wolfgang Puck. He was the executive chef there, and he totally rolled that restaurant for 10 years. And also with me is Danny Lee. He is the owner of Mandu, both of them. Well, there was both. Now there's one. But there's going to be something else. And the two of them have come together as some sort of odd couple, since Scott is kind of tall and Danny is not as tall as Scott, and have come up with this fabulous creation called Chaiko, Chinese and Korean food. So we're going to start from the beginning with both of them. I want to talk about a little bit of their backgrounds, how they both got into the food world. Some of it may sound redundant to me because I've interviewed both of them multiple times, but I am eager to share with the listening audience today about their backgrounds, where they came from, how they got into their cooking, and then how they created a fast casual concept that is going to be taking over DC and is moving all the way across the country to San Diego. So hi guys, thanks for joining me today. Stop texting or tweeting or whatever you're doing. So Danny, I want to start with you because you have a Korean restaurant. You started it years ago on 18th Street. Mm-hmm. How old was the original Mandu? 18 years?
12 years.
So 12 years ago.
We
okay.
opened November 2006.
Okay. So let's go back a little bit before that. What started you cooking in the kitchen?
You know, my mom was always a phenomenal cook, mm-hmm. home cook in the kitchen. She was born in Seoul, emigrated to the United States for graduate school. Mm-hmm. And then her and my father met at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, then moved to this area. I have one older sister, but we both grew up in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. And she was always the one who would have dinner parties. Everyone would come over and she would cook. And in Korean households, usually, you know, you always get together with all your other family friends or cousins, relatives, whatever. And everyone would bring a dish, but no one would ever dare bring a dish to my mom's house.
Okay.
But then if she
would she have been insulted if they brought a dish over?
No, they just didn't want it because they knew
she
that
was such a great cook.
You know. Honestly, better.
Okay.
But then she, whenever we went over to someone else's house, they would beg her to bring food. Mm-hmm. So that's from an early on age, I realized that she was special and she had a unique talent. So, you know,
that's
we had little
delis. Don't you think that's a lot to be proud of
it
when
is.
You're young, like when you know that everybody wants to come and eat your mom's food?
It is. And, you know, when I was growing up, I definitely did not take advantage of that because I loved hamburgers. I loved. Scott and I have this debate. I love French fries, but I specifically love wedge/steak fries.
Let's just take a poll.
Okay.
We should take a live poll.
About wedge fries versus skinny fries?
There's a debate here. There's a debate here.
Okay, what's the debate?
First of all, what's the difference between a steak fry and a wedge fry?
They're the same.
They're not the same. Because
they're not the
one's
same.
One's called a wedge fry because it's shaped as a wedge.
As a wedge.
They both suck.
Okay. I don't really like wedge fries.
Nobody does, except for Danny Lee.
Danny Lee. Well, that's okay.
Loves wedge fries.
There are...
But they have to be really cooked
tens
well.
Tens of people that love wedge fries.
Tens whole people.
Do people call into the show? Can I get some people to call in and comment on wedge fries?
Because no, but we can do... We'll put something out and find out what
if I knew how to do the poll thing on Instagram,
I
would.
I will show you how to do it. So wait, where do you get wedge fries that you really like?
I mean, Pizza Bolies. He loves them.
So I grew up loving Fuddruckers. I grew up loving Fuddruckers.
You're losing me, and I am not a food snob, but like, no.
Fuddruckers.
Nobody likes wedge fries.
Okay.
World's greatest hamburger.
No, it's not.
That's part of their motto. You can't,
also
you
can't,
just because that's their tagline doesn't mean it's accurate. Doesn't mean you should be repeating it.
It would be false advertising.
Yes. Okay, so you ate that way, and getting us back on track now.
Okay, so... she would cook Korean food at home. So one of the earliest memories my sister and I have when we were young is our family bonding time. Instead of watching TV, we would sit around my mother's kitchen table and fold dumplings, which are called mandu in Korean. So when we were coming up with the concept of what became mandu in 2006, the name mandu just stuck in our heads.
Made
because
sense.
That's, you know, we wanted to be a family restaurant. Was a family story, and that was our earliest family memories of cooking with our mother.
Okay, but I feel like there's a disconnect here. How did you go from high school eating pizza bullies or whatever it is you were eating back then?
Oh, no, and pizza bullies is recent.
Oh, okay. Stop bragging.
There's one
just next to stop China. Bragging right now. So how did you go from your American diet to being like, yeah, I want to open up a Korean restaurant in Adams Morgan?
Well, so I grew up in it. I was immersed in it.
Okay.
So I was always exposed to Korean food, always exposed to my mother cooking, you know, at home. We would go out to Uliok all the time, which used to be in Pentagon City.
Sure.
In between,
it was like
the only.
It was the only really Korean restaurant,
it
right?
Was.
There was a Korean barbecue.
It was Korean barbecue, but they served everything, and
right.
I still believe to this day that there will never be a restaurant of that style and caliber with that size of a menu ever again in the States. It was amazing.
Okay.
It was honestly the golden standard of what Korean food should be. Very, very traditional, very authentic, very traditional, but it was just done and executed perfectly. And we were lucky enough to be friends with the family. He owned the entire company, and so I kind of grew up in that kitchen. So from a very young age, I was exposed to not just Korean food, but the business side of Korean cooking as well, because I would just hang out in the kitchen. They would let me kind of run around the restaurant. So I was able to, looking back on it, you know, kind of see how things were done.
So you open up Mandu, and then what? I mean, what made you decide Adams Morgan? You thought this is a good location?
So my mom had a... There's a local restaurant named Charlie Chang, and they went to the same university. So they were part of the same alumni association. He won the bid to open up a stall in Reagan when it opened in 97.
Sure.
And when they were doing that programming, they wanted all local brands, because this is pre-9/11, where they built Reagan Airport to be not just a travel destination.
Right, but for people to come and shop. Like, it was a new
kind
of...
food and shopping destination.
Right, like a food hall, really.
Exactly.
Yes.
It was right on the metro, so if you come from D.C. or lived in the suburbs, you can go for lunch hour or whatever.
Right.
So they wanted local concepts to do it. So Charlie won a bid to do a concept he had called Charlie Chang's Kwai, which is more of the fast casual Chinese food.
Okay.
He didn't want to run it and operate it, so he asked my mother if she wanted to do it because she had food service experience.
Oh.
So she and a friend partnered up and invested the money to open up Charlie Chang's Kwai. So she was running a, you know, American-style Chinese restaurant in Reagan. But then she basically argued with him so that she could start making her own food instead of buying it from a central kitchen. So that's when she started to cook Korean food there, and...
Just took it over?
Yeah, that's where we... well, the restaurant was still primarily Chinese.
Okay.
But we put bulgogi on the menu. We put japchae. We put some dump mandu on the menu. And that's where we saw, I guess, the general public's reaction to Korean food.
Yeah, it was sort of right place, right time.
Yeah, because that's before most people knew what Korean food was.
Absolutely.
I
mean, there was only one restaurant in the region that... people who did not grow up eating the cuisine would go to sort of get what was considered then an authentic experience.
And being at an airport, we had guests from
all over the
all
world.
All over the place, you know, trying bulgogi for the first time.
Right.
And loving it. So her lease ended in 2006. So she had it for 10 years. The management company of the retail portion of the airport was changing at the time. They wanted to bring in more national brands.
Sure.
So they wanted her to stay. And again, she was only a success story throughout that entire 10-year period, ranging from individual ownerships to huge corporations. A lot of people went under. A lot of people sold. Again, you had 9/11 right in the middle of that.
Sure.
So she was a really true success story as a widowed, single minority woman.
Isn't that amazing?
Which is an amazing story.
It is an amazing story.
And she was able to make it
work.
Wait,
why don't we just get your mom in here?
I know.
She's a better guest than both of us, for sure.
Next time.
You won't get her off the mic, so you can fill up the whole hour.
So you open up the first Mandu. How many years later did you open up the one in City Vista?
4.5, I want to say. No. Okay. A little bit over 4 years.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there. I want to head over to Scott. Yep. I want to get his background a little bit, and then we'll talk about your little bromance.
Yep.
How you met. We'll talk about your meet cute, how it happened, and
it's like Miss Piggy and
Kermit.
Kermit. Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to know who's who.
I'll be Miss Piggy.
Okay. All right, Scott Trunow.
Yo.
I know you're from upstate New York.
I am from beautiful upstate New York in the Finger Lakes region.
Mm-hmm. Have another sip of that drink. Try it again.
A very small town of Penyan, New York, a beautiful mm-hmm. village, mm-hmm. producing the best Riesling in the world. Mm. Everybody should buy Riesling from upstate
New York. For those
of you
that like Riesling.
Everybody except Nikki Nellis.
Who does not like Riesling.
Who does not like Riesling. I do know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's our one bone of contention with Nikki Nellis.
You and every other some in the city who insists on putting down Riesling whenever I sit because they're going to make me like Riesling.
That's right.
It's that's the way it goes. It's gauntlet thrown.
I should have brought a bottle today.
Yes. So. I would have loved you for that.
Yeah, but I'm from upstate New York. Grew up in a little small town, steak and potato town, upstate New York. But I was kind of the kid that needed...
Steak fried potatoes?
We're better than that. We don't even serve wedge fries in upstate New
York. Oh, my God. That's false. You probably just call it something.
It's a shoestring kind of town, let me tell you.
Okay.
So not a lot of food in upstate New York, but learned to love food through all the farmers that were up there because that was a true kind of an upbringing of, hey, corn's in season, so we're going to actually have corn when it's in season. We're going to have tomatoes when they're in season. We're going to have squash when it's in season. So, and you only got corn, in late July, August, and September. You didn't get to have that.
Year round.
My mom would can and freeze stuff, so you'd have it. But you were really looking forward to corn season. And you'd be like, I always remember thinking like, oh, July, we're going to have corn. And it'd be July 4th, and my mom would be like, it's not ready yet. So
and you'd be heartbroken.
And we'd be heartbroken. And then it would be so exciting to eat corn. I kind of learned some basic food things when I was younger about seasonality and, utilizing farmers before I really understood what it was and what it means to being a chef. Those kind of things were ingrained in me as a child.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of a wandering kid and wanted to get away from living in a town of 4,000 people. So moved to Las Vegas after a few years in school, pursuing a criminal justice degree for some reason. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was always cooking and really
felt... Well, you're a contrarian. I can see you being a lawyer. I totally get that.
For sure. for sure. And then I was always cooking. And I said, finally, after my sophomore year in college, that I want to devote my life to cooking and dropped out of school.
Can I ask you, were you one of those kids in college who, wound up cooking in your dorm room? Were you entertaining for other people because you liked it? How did it happen for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the kitchen kind of drew me in or I kind of made it to the kitchen, but I always liked the weirdness of the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So I started working, as a dishwasher when I was like 16, and then I was working, worked my way up to a cook, and I worked in a small Italian restaurant, what was basically the chef and two cooks. Mm-hmm. So we did all the cooking, cleaning, and I just felt like this is awesome. This is what I want to do. So dropped out of school, had a buddy moving to Vegas, decided that let's go on a life adventure, drove a car cross country by myself to Vegas.
Cool.
Thankfully, my beautiful bride followed me a few months afterward.
Mm-hmm.
But I started working for Wolfgang Puck in his French Asian restaurant called Chinois, which was kind of a trendsetter in the fusion world, which now fusion's kind of...
It's like a bad word.
It's a questionable word. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad word. But
I think people... There was a time where people said fusion, and people were like, ooh, what does that mean?
Yeah, back in the day, in 1981, when Wolfgang opened Chinois, it was kind of pure. It was French techniques, because he's a classically trained French chef, but utilizing Asian ingredients. So it was kind of a beautiful marriage. Now sometimes it strays a little bit and it's a little weird, but back then it was really awesome. So I moved into that role. I applied, I got the job when I moved to Vegas, and I fell in love with woks, you know, and ducks and ginger and, you know, all these ingredients I'd never seen from my little insulated town in upstate New York that has zero Asian influence at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to really learn about the cuisine and the food. And so I devoted the last, you know, 20 years of my life to cooking Asian food, predominantly Chinese food. So then I worked for Wolfgang for 16 years as a, you know, kind of corporate chef. I opened the source here. And
then, did you get a lot of training? I mean, since he was a classically French-trained chef and he utilized ingredients from Asia, did he send you on a lot of educational trips? Or how did you learn how to use these ingredients that you were unfamiliar with? Because now a lot of them are way more readily available than it was 20 years ago. I mean, what's available in the grocery store today is totally different than 20 years ago.
100%. I mean, the world's shrinking and we can, you know, experiment in a lot of different ways by, you know, things are more readily available now than they ever have been. You know, Google, you know, you can...
Amazon, you can get anything.
You can teach
right.
yourself how to make something on, you know, a YouTube video. You can order it through Amazon. You can have the products in your house from across the world. So if you just continue to, you know, I think cooking is, it's a lot of practice. It's a lot of trial and error. And I think, you know, we fail all the time. You know, there's so many dishes that I, you know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll write a note to myself on my phone and I'll make this dish. And then I go in the next day and I'm so excited to make it and I make it and I'm like, well, this sucks. You know, so
it sounded like a good idea.
I was like, in my head, it looks picture perfect. It's going to taste great. It's going to look great. It's going to resonate with the guests. Everyone's going to be super stoked with it. And then you make it and you're like, well, this isn't very good.
Right. But don't you think sometimes you have this initial idea and then you play with it?
Right. So then you just tweak it. And you either, you know, sometimes you just throw it on the scrap heap and you're like, well, I tried that one. Didn't work. Let's move on to the next idea that you have. Because, you know, I think ideas are constantly, you know, for me, going through my head all the time, whether I could be at a restaurant that doesn't serve any Chinese or Korean food and I could be eating something and think about something that would be applicable to a Chinese dish or a Korean dish, and then you try to work that in and go that way. But yeah, when I worked for Wolf, we, you know, we had great chefs there, and you know, I learned a lot. I, you know, now I've traveled to China and all parts, not all parts of Asia, but a lot of parts of Asia many times, and you know, you just keep learning by reading. And
I can't remember, did you guys go to Korea together? Right.
Yep. So we went, Danny and I went to Korea together last year, which was a really amazing trip that we, you know, we had a lot of great food and really good experience there. So
what brought you guys together? Because you had already been established here before he came to town, right, Danny?
Yeah. MySpace.
No. Right. Because it still exists.
It's part of my top 10.
Is it AOL? Is that still viable?
So again, this is going back more than 10 years ago, so this is before the gigantic restaurant boom that happened in DC, and this
but I feel like you were both, like, the Mandu at City Vista and the Source are like just as the boom is percolating, right?
I think it was just before, which is why we met, because that's also what kind of helped build, you know, a lot of people around the country talk about how the DC restaurant community is unique and the fact that it's very close-knit. It's a big family. And this is how it kind of all started, where during that time period, when there weren't as many restaurants as there are now.
Right.
There were less number of chefs that really wanted to get together and create a community and you know, share stories over a drink. And Mandu happened to be a restaurant that was located in a perfect spot, where a central location, where a lot...
the one at City Vista.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We kept... we had a full liquor license there, what we still do, so we can have...
I know, I was like, wait,
full
what?
Hours. Yeah. So we have full hours, which the original Mandu did not. We had to close at midnight at the first Mandu. So the second Mandu, since we had full hours, I built a late night program there where the bar would stay open till last call every night, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And we would serve late night food as well. So a lot of chefs started to come by, a lot of restaurant industry that started to come by after work. So that's how Scott and I started, because he lives right next to that location. So
do you want to give his address? Just in case anybody wants to find him.
If anyone wants to send me gifts, you know.
We'll send you some Riesling from upstate New York.
Oh, I have plenty, believe me. I stock up every time
I go
home.
There was also during that same time period where there were a lot of chef collaborations and
well,
events.
I feel like it was just sort of starting then, because before, you know, you had this old guard in D.C., right? Mm-hmm. You had Michelle Richard, you had Roberta Donna, and Jeff Boobin and Robert.
Right.
All of them. And they would go to each other's houses once a month mm-hmm. and do what they called a chef's club. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I actually had the luxury. I was invited to one of them very early mm-hmm. on. And it was very, very cool to be able to be a part of that. But what was obvious a couple of years later was as all these other restaurants were opening up, Penn Quarter was exploding, you came to town, you were opening up, like there was this new guard coming in and they had no interest in, and this isn't a slight against them, it's just they were like, no, this is our club, go make your own club, which I think was kind of it sort of felt like. Chef's club died, it doesn't exist.
It does still exist to a certain point, and I think the old guard is, you know, they personally, they were great to me.
Oh, well, that's
good
to hear.
Like, you know, Robert specifically, you know, and Kaz. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of chefs that have been here for a long time that were really welcoming to me and made me feel like D.C. was a great community. And that's why ultimately I decided to settle down here. Originally, I was living in New York and Wolfgang called me and said, hey, I want you to move to D.C. And I said, I'm not moving to D.C., Chef. It's like a steak and potato town. What do I want to do? It's steak and potato town, USA. It's a bunch of politics and overcooked steaks. I don't need that in my life. But he convinced me to move down here. And then I realized, like, there's so many good chefs here. And Jose Andreas was here doing amazing right. things. And Michelle and Robert. And you know, they were great to me, really welcoming. And I realized that D.C. has a great community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, it's sometimes people get in groups and you hang out in groups but I think overall the community in D.C. is really a wonderful testament to what our culinary community can be and our hospitality community can be. And whether, you know, the old guard, yeah, they were here before us and they're the trendsetters, but they created,
they paved the way.
They started the path for us
and I think they certainly have interest in everybody else and are welcoming. And at least from my perspective, like, they've always, you know, the chefs that were established here before I got here have always been great to me.
Well, that is really good to hear. And yeah. So you were just starting to talk about collaborations.
Yeah, so,
which I feel like really started, like, that was sort of a new way for chefs to work together.
We would always hang out and every chef always talks about, anytime you're hanging out at another
wouldn't
chef's
it be great?
Kitchen, whoa, we should open a restaurant right. together, we should do this. So it turned into, whether it be like a James Beard Foundation dinner
mm-hmm.
Or another charity dinner, we would host each other's restaurants. It was an opportunity for chefs to take a night off from their own restaurant and cook with one of our friends at their restaurant and do something special and have a lot of fun cooking together for a large number of people. Almost like a regular service. So that's what kind of sparked a lot of this.
But it's a big difference from, you know, sort of playing in the kitchen together to doing a business together.
Yeah.
You know, so how did it morph into, like, this is really fun or we're making really great dishes to, wow, this can actually be a business? Do you know what I mean?
I mean, Danny had wanted to do sort of a modern mm-hmm. Korean restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I was...
Can I back you up? What does that mean, modern Korean?
So mandu is always... We've always made a point with mandu to... It's all based off of my mom's... The way she was brought up and her...
Her traditions.
Yeah, her traditions, what her mother taught her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we always try to do at mandu. Yeah, we take a few liberties here and there, especially with the late night bar menu. But for the most part, the main menu, we want to create a full service, a full ranging Korean menu that's based off tradition and home-style Korean cooking.
Okay.
For me, you know, being born in D.C. and being of a younger generation than my mother, I've always wanted to explore the modernization of Korean food
mm-hmm.
without it being labeled as being Americanized or fusionized or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
If you look at every other ethnic cuisine that's been successful in the States or in other countries that aren't from that native country.
Mm-hmm.
And even within that native country, food evolves. Food can modernize throughout technology, better agriculture, whatever it may be. And for some reason, with Asian food specifically, anytime there's a chef or a group
people
that
think
wants
it's supposed to remain like more to its original.
Exactly. You know, as long as you're staying true to the foundations of it.
Right, that you can't.
I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, refining it or focusing on different techniques.
Right. You see it in Italian food, you see it in French food, you exactly. see it in all exactly. other sorts
but
of cuisines.
For some reason, with specifically, I think, Asian cuisine, not just mm-hmm. Korean, anytime a chef attempts to do that, the first response typically, well, used to be, oh, they're going the fusion route, or they're formatting this dish to the American palate.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had an issue with that. So with mandu, again, we try to keep it traditional, but I always was itching to do something
more, modern. More
modern and creative and showcasing different ideas where we weren't held down with the nomenclature of being super traditional.
Well, do you think some of it has to do with the
fact... Can I just pause there for that word?
Nomenclature?
Nomenclature, yeah. You want to give them credit? Yeah. Okay. Boom. Do you want to high-five each other?
D-dog.
Would that be helpful? There we go.
Oh, that's a terrible high-five.
Terrible high-five.
That was the worst high-five. There we go.
Nomenclature.
If we can just, for a second on that, do you think some of the issues with Asian cuisine specifically, and maybe one of the reasons why people wanted to stay a certain way, is because, I mean, especially in America, the cost. People in America are really used to cheap Asian cuisine.
I think it goes
further back. Do you think it goes further
that.
Back than that? Okay, let's
it
hear
it. It goes back to what you're used to. So if you're, no matter what area you're from the D.C. area, from the New York area, from the L.A. area, from the Chicago mm-hmm. area, you know, there's going to be a little pocket of, you know, there might be a little pocket where there's a lot of Korean restaurants, mm-hmm. right? So if you grew up near one of those areas and, you know, let's say in the 80s and 90s, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and your first exposure to that cuisine was those restaurants, was basically the first iteration of Korean restaurants in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Your knowledge of what that cuisine should be is going to be predicated on that first dish
right.
you had when you were 10.
I think this goes back to your whole fry thing. It's what you grow up with.
It is what you grow up with, but I also think it's the... I don't know. It's also the like, quality of the ingredients people get used to. They're like, okay, at McDonald's, you can get a dollar burger.
Right.
What's the quality of that beef?
It's horrible.
You know, you can go to Lucky Buns, and I don't know what the price is off my top of my head, but it's more than a dollar.
Yes.
But it's creased-on beef. It's really delicious. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay a little more because the person that's creating that dish is spending more money on the product.
Right.
Creating something better for you, better for the environment, that tastes better at the end of the day. Like, you know, it's going to cost you a little
more. But don't
you
feel like we're seeing that across the board?
Yeah, with anything.
With almost all restaurants. I mean, as we see things rising up,
yeah.
especially fast casual, which we'll get into yours in just a sec, mm-hmm. it's the inclusion of better quality products and showcasing them in a different way.
It is. So, you know, if it's so... To answer your question, what
yes.
you brought up before about cost, right.
right?
So, you know, what most people view Korean food as in the States is, if you ask someone about Korean food, oh, barbecue.
Right.
They think the entire cuisine is based off of barbecue, which
sure.
in reality, that's such a minuscule part of the beauty of Korean cuisine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the cost comes into, becomes part of the story there because you have all these barbecue restaurants that are fighting for business in dense areas like, you know, the Koreatown in this area, mm-hmm, New York, LA, mm-hmm. where they're offering all these all-you-can-eat deals. You know, they're pricing themselves out, but they have all of these specials where you have to think, you know, beef is
expensive.
Yeah, it's not a cheap,
no,
especially
not
when you buy quality beef.
Right? Yeah. No, it's not cheap. No,
it's not frozen. Like,
but to the general public, you know, who, they see this amazing deal where it's all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue for $30. Most people don't think, why is it $30?
I don't know why they don't think that. That's where my head goes. Yeah. But
for us, if you're, you know, we can taste it.
Of course.
Yeah.
But
if you like grizzle.
Yeah.
like, you want to chew it a really long time. We're going to make you work for that $30.
Right. But I think that's part of the issue with cost. But, you know, a lot of people equate, again, not just Korean food, but a lot of Asian food specifically with being... on the cheaper end, because that's, again, what they were used to, going to the little hole-in-the-wall places where rent is very low. They didn't put any money into design. There's no money in service. There's no money in plateware, glassware,
right.
everything. And I think that plays a factor. And again, what Scott just said, the main thing is the quality of the ingredient that is being produced.
Well, we're going to have to take a break in 2 seconds, but I remember when you opened The Source,
mm-hmm.
that was an issue because it was really... the first very high-end Chinese restaurant in the district, in Penn Quarter, And I remember conversations about people being like, it's so expensive. When it really, it was not expensive for the quality of the food and what you were serving, but people were not used to paying that kind of money for Chinese cuisine.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's a bigger debate than I think today. But yeah, when you have white tablecloths, right. And I think it's a broader story than we have time for today. But right. when you have Riedel glasses, tablecloths, when you have front server, back server service, when you get your, you know, beef flown in from Snake River Farms or Japan, or, you know, when that, you know, our fish was from Hawaii, then, like, it, I mean, when you're spending that much money on the quality of the ingredient, the care in the ingredient, the style of service, the beverages, every the whole package is really expensive.
Right.
And I think some people are like, well, that's a dumpling. I can get the same dumpling up the street in Chinatown for, you know, half that. I'm like, well,
not really.
Do you have a front server, back server? is the pig from a local farm in Virginia? Is it handmade in the back? Like, you know, so there's so many things that go into that, that mm-hmm. That's a tough situation for, you know, any restaurant to.
But I do think today, and I'll end on this before we take a break, there is a more educated consumer, which is why I believe fast casual is as successful as it is, mm-hmm. because they're willing to pay more than for the McDonald's hamburger.
Correct.
Okay. On that note, this is Nikki Nellis with Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a second. Yeah. Hey there, it's Nikki Nellis. Thanks for joining us. Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast. Once again, I'm hosting all by my lonesome. I am up for it. So for those of you who don't know, I host another show called Foodie and the Beast. It's actually going to have its 10-year anniversary in a couple weeks, which is very exciting. And she's like, wow.
She's like, stop clapping in the mic.
And so we're very excited about that. And we've been doing this show here for almost a year now. So we were talking with Scott Truneau and Danny Lee, co-owners of Chico. We were getting their past history and a little bit of talk about how they met, how they got into their cooking world, sort of a little bit about the culture here in D.C. They're also mugging for the camera that their social media
mean mugging
is taking care of. But so you guys met. You did a couple collabs together. How did you come up with the concept for Chico, which does mean Chinese, Korean, for those who haven't figured it out?
So we have a third partner named Andrew Kim. Mm-hmm. And he and I first started talking about creating a new restaurant group focusing on
Because he was with another restaurant group.
He was. Right. And then he left and wanted to start something new. He and I have been friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to start something new with me, and then we started throwing in some ideas about different models of restaurant, different types of service. And again, like Scott said before, I've always wanted to do something a little bit more modern in terms of the Korean realm. Mm-hmm. But as we got closer to finalizing concepts and looking at spaces, I realized that it would be a lot more fun and impactful if I brought in another partner on the culinary side. Mm-hmm. So that that partner and I could collaborate on these dishes. And obviously the first person I thought of was Scott, because mm-hmm. We've been great friends and we've cooked together several times, not just in DC but kind of all around the country, and we knew that we could work well together. But it's not just that, it's also we respect each other's work ethic. Scott and I have known each other for over the years, and we both knew how each other worked. Mm-hmm. And we just knew that could work. So I took him out for drinks one night and basically just kept on ordering more drinks until he said yes.
Because you really know how he works. Right.
Exactly.
True story.
Sweet talked him.
I was having a midlife crisis, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, you know.
Was it before you were 40?
Danny is my Corvette.
Okay.
Hashtag.
That's a good one.
But, you know, it was one of those things where it just felt right and mm-hmm. good. And I remember the next morning after we had drinks, when I first told him, because you know he had knew that Drew and I had been talking, so I took him out for drinks and I was like, oh, I just want to let you know what we're up to. He's like, yeah, I'm curious, what are you guys doing? And then I laid it down on him. I was like, well, I really want you to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. But did you have the concept in mind? Like, did you
no.
already have? Okay, so it was a true collaboration.
We'd actually talked about doing a market together,
yeah, years ago.
So mm-hmm. yeah, so Danny and I, like, over, you know, some drinks one night, we're like, hey, we should do a market together. And you know,
so the Chinese Korean kind of collaboration yeah. had been discussed before,
yeah. right.
but not in the same
not in a restaurant yeah. business. But I was like, I'll still work at the Source, like, you'll still have Mandu, but we can make a, I think DC, you know, lack DC proper doesn't have many markets.
Like Hana Market, yeah. which is awesome,
which is amazing.
Right.
We love Hana Market, but that's it.
That's
and
it.
And that's focused on Japanese food. So mm-hmm. we, you know, I was thinking, like, we need a market in DC proper that has Chinese and Korean ingredients. And we kind of talked about that. We're like, let's do that. And we started to
think about it, we can make some sauces.
Yeah. We can
have a little stall, actually a counter
about yeah.
where we'd serve noodles or dumplings, you know, yeah. one dish a day or whatever.
We still might do the market. Who knows?
I mean, I know, but it sounds like initially you were like, let's keep it simple.
Yeah.
But that's not what you wound up doing, because what you are doing is way more complex.
And it started off, even Chico started off way more simple in our heads than.
Yeah, I was thinking like we'll just like dip our toe in the pond and we'll do something together. I'll have my job and you'll still have yours, and then it just
grew into something larger.
We jumped into the deep end.
Right, so let's explain what that deep end is for people who don't know.
So Chico stands for Chinese Korean.
It's pronounced Chico.
Thank
a lot you. Of people, a lot of people pronounce Chico.
Chico, they can't help themselves, common, yeah. right? It's a clothing store for
yeah.
women of a certain yep. age and size.
But we wanted to create a concept where obviously, Scott's dedicated his culinary career to learning and cooking Chinese cuisine. Mm-hmm. I've done the same with Korean. And we wanted to have a concept where we could showcase our experience with each cuisine, but done in a very approachable, but yet impactful and exciting manner.
Right, but so you didn't merge the two cuisines. You both have dishes that are very creative that incorporate either Korean or Chinese components, but you didn't decide on a fine dining establishment, nor did you decide on even an upscale casual restaurant like Mandu. You went with a fast casual concept.
We wanted to have fun, and I think what we wanted to have fun, we wanted to be able to serve the most amount of people as possible. And Scott, when we were first going with Scott Drew and I, when we were first going through the first round of concepts for what we wanted to do, was he brought up, you know, let's redefine that corner store Chinese takeaway,
mm-hmm.
right? That everyone's grown up with, everyone's gone there or delivery from there. You know, let's do this with this concept. You know, let's find a small space where we can kind of redefine the Chinese takeaway, but also implement Korean food as well, and have the menu be split up half and half.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done in a very approachable manner. The price point is set at a point where it's very approachable and affordable.
Yes.
And we found the space, and then we kind of dictated our, I guess, service style based on the space.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You're on fire, Danny Lee. I just want to let you know.
Thank you.
It's so nice the way you guys support
Nikki.
I feel like I don't even need to be here at the moment. So you come up with this menu. You decide how you want to execute it. Do you, Scott, for you especially, because you were working in a very large fine dining establishment, was it hard to let that part go initially? Because you like to walk around the dining room and shake hands and do all of that. And
kissing
the fest,
babies.
Right, he loves all that shit. So
I think she cursed.
You can swear on this.
Oh, you
really?
Can curse?
Yes.
Oh, you should have told me that earlier. Oh, my God.
I was trying to be careful. I didn't know I could curse.
It would have been less than one. Different words.
So was that a hard step for you? And I think for fast casual, like the whole role of dining has changed so drastically in the 10 years, especially in the DC market with things like Beefsteak and Taylor and Cava. I mean, that Cava just got all that, you know, just bought Zoe's.
Money.
Congrats. And Sweetgreen and all that. Was that part of your thought process when you were like, let's do a fast casual concept? Were you thinking we can stamp it, we can roll it out?
No, I don't think we were thinking that. I just, for me, at the time in my life, like I joke about the midlife crisis, which I don't think I've had yet necessarily, but professionally, I just wanted to do something different.
I'm going to have mine tomorrow.
Midlife crisis? Yeah. What are you doing? Buying a Porsche or something? Yeah. Is your birthday tomorrow?
No. It's not my birthday tomorrow.
My birthday's
in May. You know my birthday. That's why.
The beast? How do I know? David's not here. I don't know.
I'm like, his midlife crisis. Oh, that's perfect. How that goes.
I know that story for sure. Mm-hmm.
let's talk about that story.
Yeah, let's turn the mic the other way.
David, you made a mistake not coming to this one.
Your own show. All
You've
right,
you've been
so
replaced,
seriously.
Beast. I wanted a different challenge in my life, and you know, when you work fine dining, you know, there's a lot of pressure on certain areas of what you're doing. You know, you have Bernardot plates that cost $95 a piece. You have Riedel glasses that are $40 a piece. You have tablecloths and candles, and you know, the big restaurants I worked in, you had 120 employees. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a lot of stressors outside of just making good food. Of course, you had to make good food,
no, but it's a
buy
business.
Quality ingredients, like, and also try to, you know, make money,
mm-hmm.
which it's a challenge. So for me, I just wanted a different challenge. You know, at this point in my life, I wanted to, you know, running any business is a challenge, whether it's, you know, an auto parts store or, you know, making t-shirts or whatever business you're in, there's challenges, there's logistical challenges, there's staffing challenges, there's creativity challenges. But I at that time, I didn't want to worry about seeing a plate break that cost $95 and being like, oh my God, I can't believe that plate broke. You know, so I wanted to do something where I could continue to cook, fuel my passion, you know, which is cooking, and do it in a different way. So we, Danny and I talked, we wanted to do something more casual. We wanted to do something, like Danny said, kind of breaking into the market of the mid-scale Chinese restaurant, you know, and taking that familiarity with the rising popularity of Korean food and kind of do it together based on, just because the two of us, you know, have our backgrounds and that's what we both like to cook. So we said, let's cook both those things and let's not worry about expensive plates. Let's just worry about creating a good team and buying good products and, you know, being able to keep those good products because we have a small menu. We can keep the price point down. So we only have 16 menu items, not 26 or 36 or... You know, Cheesecake Factory has 76.
Right,
you know,
but you can come into the restaurant. You can eat in the restaurant.
Yeah, we definitely want you to eat in the restaurant. That's a big thing.
And you can do takeaway.
We have a fun vibe. You know, Danny created a really cool playlist that's super fun, and all the songs are upbeat. And, you know, it's good to be, you know, we have, you know, beer, and we have Riesling, and, you know, we have good wine.
You have something for me.
we have cocktails, and yeah, we definitely want you in there eating, trying something different, but super casual. Like if the health board would let us, I would say no shirt, no shoes,
service,
full service,
right?
You know, but I think, do you even have to wear shoes? Is that a law?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Are you sure?
No shirt, no shoes, no service.
I think that's like a perv
because you could wear no shoes at Chico. I don't care.
Okay. We're not going to fight that one right now.
Unless the health board says you have to wear shoes, then you have to wear shoes.
Okay.
Otherwise, but we just want to create a place where that's super comfortable.
But what about the chef's bar? Because that seems like that's an interesting addition for a fast casual concept.
So for me, I did feel a little bit weird about, you know, I guess I'm old, but I don't want to wait in line. Mm-hmm. You know, like I that's the last thing I want to do is wait in line.
No, you're not old. I'm not waiting in line. You know? I'm not going to be old. I didn't wait in line when I was 16. I'm not waiting in line now.
Oh, trust me. I love Tom, but I've never eaten a bad sandwich because I refuse to wait in line.
Right. You know? Oh, I'm totally with you.
It's like a restaurant that's like number one on my list.
I mean,
I've
eaten there, but I'm not waiting in line.
But I don't wait in line. So, I want to have a place where if you want to experience the menu, you could make a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
There is the possibility. There's only 8 reservations a night. But you can definitely make a reservation.
Well, so for people who haven't had the luxury of the experience yet, I'd love for you to explain it. Because you're basically eating one of everything on the menu. And it is done in a really lovely fashion. I mean, you're sitting right at the kitchen. You get to talk with who's ever there that night. And, I love the experience.
So we call it the kitchen counter menu at Chico. So the 4 seats are... sat at a counter that directly faces our open kitchen, which is tiny, so you get to see everything.
Right.
We wanted to do a tasting menu that Scott kind of nicknamed Eat the Menu, so that we could feature almost everything on our menu. So that one visit, you'll get a really clear snapshot of everything that we do at Chico.
Mm-hmm. And how often does the menu change? Like, how often are you doing new additions?
We do a substantial menu change every season.
Okay.
But even... in between the seasonal changes, we're constantly refining each component. For instance, even though the main menu item may look the same, for instance, our house fried rice, the components into it will change routinely based on the seasonal produce that we can get, and that happens for the majority of our dishes. Again, we'll do a pretty substantial change where we'll actually remove several dishes and put on new dishes according to season. But with the tasting menu, it's a lot of fun because you can see everything that we're doing at that point.
Right.
For what we think is a pretty affordable price.
Yes. Scott, what would you like to say?
For sure. And then, you know, along with Danny was saying, but we do also a lot of catering. So the Fried Rice Collective, which is our parent company, we do loads of catering. So we do...
As a recipient of said catering, disclosure, you guys catered my son's
graduation
party.
Boom.
And it was... I mean, it was really phenomenal. It was excellent.
Yeah, so we do a lot of catering, and a lot of the catering program is sort of bespoke catering. So if you want Grandma Betty's, you know, tuna noodle casserole and you have a recipe, we'll recreate it and make it for your party.
Really?
Hashtag bespoke.
Okay, hashtag bespoke. All right. I don't know if I want you making Aunt Betty's tuna noodle casserole, but well, I'd rather saying, let you do what you're good at.
No, but a lot of people want a certain dish. Or so last week I did a Greek wedding. You mm-hmm. know, 2 weeks before that I did, you know, an American style buffet where we did tenderloins.
And, oh right, like didn't you do a Passover Seder?
We did a Passover Seder. Like we can cook. We've been doing it for a long time. So we'll cook anything you want us to cook. Obviously, mm-hmm. our focus is Chinese and Korean food. But our catering company that's kind of powered through Chico, but it's separate. It's a separate entity. We also will cook whatever you want us to cook. And so there's a whole catering arm. So the whole catering arm of the company. And so Danny's saying the menu on Eat the Menu. It changed. It might be something like, hey, we have a catering dish that someone wanted a Japanese menu, so we're doing some Japanese dishes. We'll do a Japanese dish on Eat the Menu that's a mm-hmm. special. So seasonality, you know, changes that way, but it also changes based on, you know, what we're doing for specials that day and also what we're doing through the catering wing.
Well, it just sounds like there's a lot of hospitality in what you all are doing. We don't have a ton of time, so I do want to get to the fact that you are opening up in DuPont. You are opening up in San Diego. Is that sort of the goal now? Now that you're here, what is it, almost 2 years later? Is that sort of the goal that you want to open up across the country? And what do you want to do with it?
We're still trying to figure that out.
Okay, I'm just curious.
San Diego was a situation that presented itself because Drew, our third partner, he moved out there with his family. Mm-hmm. That was always the plan. He wanted to move out there,
move out there.
The summer before his oldest son started first grade. Mm-hmm. So it would have less of a – it would be easier on that transition for his son or sure. oldest son. So we knew that going into opening up the first Chico. And right when he got out there, he found a spot that was great. So Scott and I flew
Feels
out
like
there.
Chico.
Yeah, Scott and I flew out there in the beginning of the year, and we loved him. We're like, sign it.
Okay, so you're going to do the same concept – you'll also have the counter out there?
Yes.
But how does it work without you guys there?
It's the staff. And you know, we give, Scott and I always give full credit to how great our staff is.
Will you give it
is.
A chef? Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, will chef. There be a chef whose name you use, who's like, this is a chef? You know, like when you opened up the store, Wolfgang Puck was like, it's Scott Renaud mm-hmm. at the, you know, behind the stove.
We have a chef out in San Diego that's trained with us here in D.C. for 2 months mm-hmm. And drove across country with his wife and now lives out there and is setting up the restaurant for us right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing about Danny and I working together, I think a lot of times people say, like, don't go into business with your friends. Mm-hmm. I think Danny and I are a little bit different animals on that. We, you know, he doesn't need the credit. I don't need the credit. Like, there's no... We're just in this to cook. To
okay, have you met Scott Renaud? I'm sorry.
Teams,
are we kidding?
To create teams.
No, this is true. I mean,
I'm cheesy. Yeah.
Honestly,
so
that's
cheesy.
One main reason. No, but this is important. That's one main reason why we specifically
You know his
called
hashtag
it,
is Diva, Diva, Diva.
That's not true. Specifically
that's
called
not
it,
true.
We specifically called it the kitchen counter, not the chef's counter.
Right.
That's right.
Because we wanted it to be about the restaurant and our kitchen, not as opposed to any one of us individually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, special guest.
Amber Pfau.
Amber Pfau in the house.
Yeah, there we go.
Speaking of San Diego.
You have to close that door. Close that door.
Sweet home San Diego, okay. Our next spot. But we, you know, we just want to open restaurants that have really great teams, really great mm-hmm. food, and Eric that we hired out there. We'll work closely with Drew and, you know, Danny and I obviously will be there a lot,
mm-hmm.
but we have full faith in the team out there. And as we continue to grow, it's all about the people you put around you. So
what about for DuPont? When are we thinking-ish
so
on
San
DuPont
Diego,
circle?
San Diego will be the first one
okay.
in this next line of opening. So San Diego, we're shooting for sometime in October.
Okay, great.
And then we want to be smart about it. So DuPont, whenever San Diego comes... San Diego opens, DuPont will follow probably about 30 days after.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at November for DuPont.
Very exciting.
That will also have a kitchen counter. And
that'll have a new kitchen counter. So we won't do Eat the Menu there. We have a new
concept,
a new tasting menu
format.
at the counter, which okay. is based on the royal cuisines of Korea and the imperial cuisine of China.
Cool.
So it's the royal cuisine of Chico, which is a... similar
and that's just
format,
just at the counter. Same, only four seats?
Yep.
Okay, so same concept. And then you're going to be opening up Anju.
Yeah, so the original Mandu, unfortunately, had a fire the day we opened up Chico Capitol Hill, which was unbelievable
Tragic.
Timing. Yeah, I remember my mom saying, I called my mom. I waited till like 7 in the morning to call her. She's like, oh, you know, there's an old Korean saying that says if your business burns down, it's a good sign. And I was like, there's not a saying.
There is not a saying that she totally made.
There's no way anyone.
She made that up.
Yeah. So anyways, she took it well. But we've been closed, and then we decided to use this as an opportunity to rebrand the restaurant as Anju. So Anju means, Anju pretty much translates to food consumed with alcohol.
Okay.
So there are a lot of Anju.
I always thought it was like snacks. Like to me in my head, I was like, it's like snack food.
It's pretty wide encompassing now. So there are a lot of Anju restaurants and bars in Korea that base themselves out of labeling themselves as an Anju restaurant. But basically what that means is you have a really creative bar program while serving non-traditional Korean food.
Okay. Which sounds really exciting. So, but you had to redo the entire upstairs floor, which...
Everything.
Everything, right?
Everything.
Everything got
gutted. But hadn't you just kind of redone the upstairs floor? Wasn't it renovated? Like,
we had replaced the kitchen, and we had redone parts of the upstairs, the flooring.
That's what I thought. Oh, God, that's so tragic.
So it was... the timing wasn't ideal.
Okay.
But...
Well, I wanted, since we only have about 2 minutes left, I do want to talk about what's interesting about Chico, especially under the fast casual umbrella, is that you guys actually do programming at the restaurant. You do, you bring in other chefs, you do collabs with them, you're doing this crab week. So can we just talk about some of that? Because that's, I think that's really different in this food space for a restaurant of this style.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we have the opportunity to do it in any restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Fast casual, casual, fine dining. You have,
but you
the
just
ability.
Don't really see it.
You don't see.
You
it.
You see the collabs like with a sandwich, right? Like, let's use Taylor Gourmet. Yeah. Like they'll collab with somebody for a sandwich, which is great. But it's not a.
We've done it.
We did Chico at Taylor.
But it's not a. It's not an activation. It's not an event.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but Danny and I just, you know, we've worked in the industry for a long time. We have a lot of good friends that, you know, are like-minded, love to cook, love to experiment, love to do different things. So we said just because we're in a casual restaurant doesn't mean we can't continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we just, and, you know, the chefs like it because it's super casual. There's no pretension. There's no rules. They can do whatever they want to do, whatever they want to promote, whatever, you know, we're doing. They're on board with us. So it's definitely a fun way to do it. And, you know, our Chico concept, I think, is basically like try to get really good ingredients, you know, and turn them into great dishes and
not
charge a lot.
Can we talk about the two promos that are coming up?
Yeah. So,
Crab Week.
Crab Week is coming up next.
What's the Jaws music? Can you do the Jaws music right now?
Oh, there you go. He's
oh,
got
yeah.
much better.
We have the musician doing it. Okay, Danny's also a very talented musician.
Okay.
Super karaoke star.
We have Crab Week.
Little Danny Lee info.
We have Crab Week starting next Monday for a full week where we're going to be celebrating.
Yeah, we were at the end. He was at the beginning.
Jumble Up Maryland Crab.
Mm-hmm.
Scott and actually our good friend John, who's with us right now.
Right.
Who's guided us through this process.
He's a seafood evangelist.
He is a seafood evangelist.
A misconception is that...
Seafood savant.
That local crab here, that the prime season is, you know, midsummer, which actually isn't true. It actually happens basically after Labor Day.
Right.
Yeah. The water starts to get colder. The crab starts to get fatter. There's more beautiful fat within the crab. It's just tastier at this time of year.
So what are you going to do? Just kind of crab dishes, crab menus?
So we have, we created a new menu with, you know, 3 to 4 dishes every night where we'll be featuring dishes based off of Maryland blue crab.
Cool.
And then Friday the 28th, we have Chef Jamie Bissonnette from Boston. Well, he's based out of Boston. He has restaurants now in Boston, New York, Dubai, and
True
Bangkok.
Beast. True Beast. Cool.
One
he's
of the most
beast.
Amazing
so
chefs.
So this is a late night event, though, right?
Chico After Dark.
Chico After Dark. Excellent.
Starts at doors open at 9:30 on Friday the 28th, where it's first come, first serve. We'll be doing a special dish, and Jamie will be doing 4 dishes, all based off of Maryland Blue Crab.
And it's just a party, right?
It's a
delicious
fun.
Party, a yummy party.
We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And then Saturday we have a collaboration brunch with the District Food and Beverage Collective, which is a great food and beverage group in the city. And we're doing a brunch then. And we are doing a brunch Sunday, but unfortunately both seatings are sold out. So if you want to get on Crab Brunch, you can go. There's 7 tickets left for the Saturday brunch a week and a half from now.
And you can find out all that information on the list, areyouonit.com. Isn't that perfect?
Boom.
Great segue to end.
To end the show. Well, I want to thank you both for joining today and for filling everybody in on all the exciting things you guys are doing. Can we get the address and website, please, of Chico?
Chico is at 423 8th Street Southeast, ChicoDC.com, mm-hmm. soon to be at 2029 P Street Northwest.
And where is it in San Diego?
101 North Highway.
Excellent. Encinitas, California, North County, San Diego.
Okay. All right, guys. Boom. Thanks so much for joining me today. This is Nikki Nellis, Industry Night in the gorgeous Line Hotel. Join us again next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.